Well, tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to be talking about some more mysteries on this planet. Carmen Bolter with us, also one of her books, Angels and Archetypes. We'll talk with her about that as well on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Dr. Carmen Bolter, author, filmmaker, retired professor from the Graduate Division at the University of Calgary. Carmen has been to at least 53 countries in search of mysteries of ancient cultures. Her quest has brought her to Egypt 27 times, and here she is back on Coast to Coast. Carmen, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Great. 27 times to Egypt already?
Yep.
That is something. I assume you knew Zahi Hawass.
Yes, absolutely.
And do we know where he is anymore?
He's in the U.S., and apparently he's been protected by the U.N., and he's set up to live there now.
So he's here? That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Will he talk to the media, or does he not want anything to do with anybody?
Oh, I think he'd be open to talking to the media. He's actually been musing about getting reinstated, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Are you in touch with him?
Through somebody who, a mutual friend, yes.
Would you make the offer for me?
Sure.
We'd love to have him on.
Okay.
I mean, all kinds of things we can talk about. We won't say where he is if he's concerned about that or anything else. So what's new with you?
Well, I've taken 26 flights this year, and I've already been in six countries, speaking, filmmaking, doing various things, and giving a paper in Russia. I've just come back from there. So I've been really busy.
Carmen, what drives you?
A quest to find the truth and to reconnect the past life memories to the reality that I'm seeing now.
Explain more.
Well, as you know, I started having past life memories as a little girl, and I would see visions of Egypt with all kinds of high-level initiates with abilities and the pyramids fully functioning as resonance fields and creating different forms of power. And then we seem to have lost that somehow. And even the ideas of Atlantis and what they were capable of in those times. Somehow, I've remembered at least 85 past lives. I stopped counting at 85. And so with my psychic abilities increasing as I've gone to the pyramid and spent more time integrating, I really have a quest to find out how we can get back to those abilities and how we can return to a golden age. So I think that we're headed that way, and I think it's possible.
Why are we so obsessed with the pyramids as people?
I think we know that they have a great power, and some pyramids are dead, if you will. They're not functioning as live mechanisms. But I think that we have an intuition that there's a grandeur about them, and you can't help but be in awe when you're standing next to the Great Pyramid. It's just a phenomena in and of itself, and I think that drives curiosity, and it doesn't quite add up, because there's nothing that really points in our society to how we could have had a culture that was able to create that, and, you know, we couldn't even create it now if we tried.
No, not at all. People are so baffled about it. The only thing that I can assume, we didn't have 100,000 slaves pulling those stones.
That's right, but you know, they tried to build a pyramid in 1978, I believe. It was a Japanese team, and they actually had teams of 100 men trying to pull these stones, and they couldn't do it. And they tried to put them on barges on the Nile, the way that Egyptology describes that the pyramids were built, and they couldn't do it. So they ended up moving the stones with steamboats and using cranes. And even so, it was just a smaller pyramid. It wasn't nearly as big. So really, we don't have the technology.
Yeah, I didn't think we had cranes and steamboats in the Egyptian times, did we?
No, that's correct.
And it's truly amazing how that was done. What do you think the pyramids are used for? What do you think they're there for?
Well, certainly they're multidimensional, multi-purpose instruments. Certainly they're not tombs, as we've discussed before, and there's never been a mummy found. Now, the energetics and the geometry of the pyramids is incredibly phenomenal in that they're houses of nature, in that that's what per-netter means in the ancient Egyptian language. And so they represent the earth grid and the earth resonance field, and there's certain points within the pyramid that have increased energy, which is where the so-called sarcophagus in the king's chamber is placed. Now, I've been doing some research on what the effect is of people getting into the sarcophagus, and it seems that it has something to do with ascension, which means a loosening of the hold of the third dimensional reality and the physical body, and being able to depart somehow and have an out-of-body experience, but with control and consciousness. So I think that the ancient initiates were trained in a way that we don't even understand, and they were learning how to navigate other dimensional spheres so that when they passed from this body, they were able to stay conscious. And so for us, we think incarnation was outlawed in the Council of Nicene in 323 AD. And so we don't really have in our vocabulary this idea of continuing, but certainly the ancients did.
Do you think when you talk about pyramids being alive, others are dead? What makes those that are alive, alive?
Well, that's an excellent question. I can point to the work of John Burke, who brought seeds into the live pyramids and watched the seeds gain greater harvests. And then there were certain pyramids in Mexico where there was no effect, and so the pyramids were dead. Now, the Great Pyramid still has energy, particularly a few days before and after solstices and equinoxes. And so there's something about the placement being on the so-called acupuncture points or the ley lines of the planet. And there's something about the resonance fields, the actual construction of the building material itself, the kinds of stone. So there's a crystalline matrix in a lot of the stones, particularly granite, which creates some kind of radon gas that is then creating an energy field inside the pyramid. So I think that now we're coming along and there's new science that's showing us how we can recreate that.
I'll always remember a kid in school used to wear a pyramid-type hat whenever he was taking a test, and for some reason the guy always passed.
Well, the pyramids themselves create huge standing columnar waves, which is an energy that comes straight out the top because of the shape of them and the way that they're oriented. And so there could be something to that, but it's more than alignment and it's more than just the shape of the pyramid.
Is this energy beam that hits the pyramids, is it coming from the universe? Is it always out there?
Well, I think it is generating, and it's coming from the solar system, the galaxy, and the universe. I think it's connecting all of those together. And that's why this galactic alignment that's coming along on December 21st, 2012 is particularly important, because it's a marker for all of those systems aligning together.
Carmen, tell me a little bit, too, about these past lives that you've had, because I think they're probably directly related to your interest in pyramids.
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, I remember, three distinct past lives in Egypt, and of course, none of them ended well.
Ooh.
And some of them are very distant past, like I'm convinced that it's like 50,000 BC, something like that, before the pyramids were on those place markers. But there's a unified ground plan for Giza. And so I remember working with the high-level initiates. I remember the training programs and how the initiates were able to go to the eighth-level initiation on their own, and then they almost had to be supercharged by the high priestess individually in certain conditions inside what I remember to be the second pyramid. And so they didn't talk very much. It was more like chirping and singing, and they were telepathic, able to send pictures across to one another. Everyone did their work bare feet. The males and females were trained in separate places, and then they came together to do something that brought the yin and the yang energy. And so they were grounding the cosmic energy into the earth, and they were taking the telluric energy and pushing it up into the cosmos. So it's almost like they were human divining rods. And just the way our neural synapses don't touch, but a hormone jumps across that gives the brain the signal to move our hand up and down or whatever, the human divining rods were part of this big machine, and they were an essential part of it. So that's why when I see reenactments of Egypt, when you see priests and priests and priestesses walking, they often they're not standing in a way where they would be able to contain the amount of energy that would have come through. So I think that that's largely been misunderstood, how the initiates worked. And even the bands that you see around the ankles and the wrists mm-hmm. were part of being able to contain more energy. And so it was almost like it would protect them. And so they literally were part of this energetic exchange. And it's fascinating.
In your series, The Pyramid Code, you clearly point out that you do not believe the pyramids were tombs. Yet there's that camp of people out there, Carmen, who still think that's what they're there for.
Well, it's funny that not finding a single mummy anywhere inside the pyramids hasn't deterred them, A, and B, that Zahi Hawass, who you mentioned before, has been so adamant about them being tombs.
Yeah.
And he's been saying that when he finds Cheops' mummy inside the Great Pyramid, he was going to retire. But in this recent conversation I had with my connection to Zahi, he said Zahi doesn't even believe that himself, and that there was a lot of political pressure to continue with the old story, and so he stuck to it. So it really doesn't make sense. There are flat-topped mastabas and the step pyramid itself where they did find grave goods, and they can be tombs. That's fine.
Do you think Zahi would back down on his constant discussions that the Egyptians built the pyramids by hand?
Well, it would surprise me, but this last conversation I had was actually quite revealing, that he has maintained a storyline for a purpose and that his beliefs are quite different. So in a context, perhaps now that he doesn't have his position as he did, perhaps he would change. But I think once, you know, he's been driving that point home for so long.
Sure.
That I think it would be hard for him to change his story. But I found it a little bit relieving to even contemplate that he doesn't believe it either.
The pyramids themselves, were they located specifically at these geographical points on purpose?
Well, if you look at the pyramids north and south of the Giza Plateau, the Band of Peace, they look like they're just scattered. But I've done a lot of work to correlate, and of course Robert Bovall gave us the Orion correlation with the Giza pyramids, and then Walter Cruttenden gave us the idea that we could be in a binary system with our sun and Sirius. And so I took the pyramid of Abu Roush and lined up various star systems into Starry Night Pro, and I saw clearly that there's a sky-ground correlation where Abu Sir is connected to the Pleiades and Cygnus is connected to Dashur. And there's a grid on the extra-galactic grid, and there's a meridian that goes straight through, and it goes right up the spinal cord of the bird of Cygnus. And if you keep going through the nose and keep going, you arrive at the galactic center. And so that is, like, incredible. And how they could have figured it out is even more astounding. So a lot of researchers that have been speculating which star systems go where haven't put it to the test in Starry Night Pro, because you can run a program that allows you to look back all the way back to 54. Well, you can go back to 99,000 BC and all the way forward to 99,000 AD. And if the wrong star system is in that configuration, the whole thing breaks apart after a few centuries. And so this thing does not fall apart all the way back to 50,000 BC and forward into the distant future. And so that is completely fascinating. And so I have not identified what Saqqara is yet, but I'm convinced that there's a sky-ground correlation and that there's a lot going on in terms of our place in the solar system, our place in the galaxy, and our place in the universe, that the Egyptians, that's what they speak of as their cosmology.
Carmen, how close can you get to the Great Pyramids of Giza? Can you actually go up and touch it, or do they have it roped off?
Well, they have it loosely roped off, and they keep changing the rules, and it's becoming more and more limited in terms of access. But we've got permits, and I've gotten permits many times to go inside and to be in all three chambers and to actually walk right on the outside of the pyramid just for a little ways to get into the forced entry where you go in.
Can you feel energy just by being next to them?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? I'm finding over the years now, as the energy is increasing, as we get closer to 2012, it seems to me that the energy field is a little larger. And so from the hotel we stay in when we do the groups, the Meridian, to me, I can feel the pyramid energy all the way over there. And it used to be that I had to stand a little closer to connect with the energy. So I definitely think there's something palpable about it.
I mean, would it ever get to the point where almost like a light bulb, it would go on and people would see it radiate?
Well, that's a matter of perception. You know, we can take pictures of orbs, for example, with our pictures,
right,
sorry, with our cameras, but can you see them with the naked eye? Some people are training themselves to be able to. So whether we would see or we would perceive in another way remains to be seen. But there's a certain concept called synesthesia, which is a cross perception between the senses where you could hear a picture or see music. And so when you're saying, can you see and feel the resonance, it would be that sort of sense that we would get, that we're not just seeing it with our eyes.
Some people think that they might have been UFO landing points. What do you think of that theory?
It doesn't really make sense because there's nowhere to land. Like, even though the Great Pyramid doesn't have a capstone, it's not flat up there. I've been up there a few times. And so there's I don't know why people are so curious about the connection with the extraterrestrials and that sort of thing. No, I don't think they're landing pads.
In terms of how they were built, might they have had ET help?
Well, indirectly, like I think of it in terms of channeling. Like the ancients were very connected to cosmic beings and to ancient teachers that were perhaps not manifest in the physical, if you think about the Hathors. So I'm certain that they had ancestral teachings, and you could refer to that as ET help, but I'm not convinced that ETs came down and did it. I mean, they may have contributed to anti-gravity fields. And you know, this is something, you know, I hesitate, sure, as I'm saying it, because how are you going to prove it? So I'm into research and facts and what can we measure and what can we demonstrate. So it could happen that the ETs land and tell us the story, but that hasn't happened yet.
I've long suspected the possibility of some kind of anti-gravity way of moving these blocks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somewhere, whether it was sound resonance, who knows what, but, you know, there's just no way. I just can't understand how people conventionally believe these blocks were moved or pushed.
Well, the smallest ones are 2 tons, but they go up. There's one block on the plateau that's 200 tons. Well, a rail car, the light rapid rail cars weigh 9 tons. And so, I mean, how would you be able to, you know, get one up on the roof and another and another and another? I mean, you would have to be loading these things. That's the fact. It would take 20 years of putting one a minute for 24 hours,
yeah,
a day, 7 days a week. It's impossible. So there had to be some kind of other mechanism. I am subscribing to the idea of poured stones. Joseph Davidovich talks about this,
yeah,
because now with polymers, it's impossible to tell between some stones if they've been poured or if they've been carved. And he's done some really incredible work with that. And again, it's not accepted by traditional Egyptology. But even looking at the temples, you can see that there's some kind of pattern, and it makes sense that they would have been poured, even the frescoes in the temples. And sometimes the way they peel away when they're damaged, they come off in chunks, and you can see that there was a base underneath. So I'm much more inclined to think that some of the stones were poured.
Are you amazed at, you know, just the accuracy of the pyramids?
Yes. I mean, the numerology, the geometry, it is speaking a language of mathematics that is unshakable. It's impossible to measure the pyramids without the casing stones to know. I mean, there's the estimates been made. But in terms of the phi and the pi ratio, it's incredible how many of the natural systems within our galaxy and solar system are represented in the measurements of the pyramids.
We're going to continue talking about the pyramids this hour. Next hour, we'll talk with Carmen about her work with angels. All that is next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's not too early to start thinking about the holidays, and the Coast to Coast AM.com store is now open with brand new material, new hats, mugs, you name it. They even have some license plate holders that our webmaster Lex is all excited about. You can look at it. Simply go to the store at coasttocoastam.com. And we're with Dr. Carmen Bolter talking about the pyramids this hour. Her book and her DVD, it's The Pyramid Code, book on angels and archetypes, next hour. You came back from Russia. You gave a paper at the International Congress at St. Petersburg. Tell me, what was it all about?
Well, what I did was a study inside the Great Pyramid, and I did a baseline with people. I've got this new device that's electrophotonic imaging that measures the consciousness fields in a person, and then we looked at the effects. So we had a baseline before we went into the Great Pyramid, and then inside the pyramid, and then after. Inside the pyramid, every participant had never been in the pyramid before, and they spent 2 minutes in the sarcophagus, stepped out, and were measured again, and then one day later. And so I've got the results here in images on the website. If you want to just take a look at before, inside, and after, because what I was thinking is that it's made me more psychic to spend time in the Great Pyramid, I'm seeing that the pictures are not showing up like I thought they would.
That's all right.
Before the Great Pyramid going in, people were loosely connected. So when I was talking about synesthesia and cross senses, and I've got in the diagram a 360-degree sphere, and Hakim in the Pyramid Code talks about 360 senses as opposed to the five that we have. And so I was hypothesizing that being inside the pyramid could help to make more connections. And so what we see in the results is, pulling it up here, sorry.
You with us, Carmen?
Yes. What you see in the results in the before is that there's just a few connections between the crown chakra and the throat. And then inside the pyramid, what starts to happen is that there's strong statistical significance that it would only be happen in 1 in 1,000 chance that these chakras start to connect to the energy field, and they're increasing the size of the energy field. But then after the people integrated, it actually entrained the chakras. And so each of the chakras was connected to the others, and everything was resonating off the heart. And so this was a preliminary study, and when we go back to Egypt for 12-12-12, I'll be running this study again and also doing a delayed post-test to see how people integrate. Mm-hmm. But in terms of preliminary findings, I really think that the effect of the Great Pyramid does connect people more to their ability to be psychic, and I find that fascinating.
The people of that indigenous region at the time, do you think they possessed these incredible abilities?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that they were far more advanced than we were, than we are, and they were able to, they understood levitation, which is the anti-gravity field. They were able to bilocate, teleport. They had alchemy, they were able to manifest, and these are things that people are starting to get abilities again, and there's much more now that people are talking about, but what's new is the ability to measure some of this.
Carmen, could these pyramids also have been used as some kind of power source in that it beamed power to people, maybe wherever they lived or whatever they had, that it was just a constant beam of energy?
Yes, and I think that they also were coordinated, and there was an ability to store the energy. So it wasn't just one thing. It was many pyramids connecting in many different ways and also connecting to the world grid. And I think that it was offsetting the loss of energy that was happening as we descended from the Golden Age. And so now we're turning the corner and going back. But yes, I think it was a huge coordinated structure. And so most of the time, when we look through our patriarchal eyeglasses, we see the division between things instead of the connection between things, and that's one of the secrets to understanding this.
December 21st, 2012, will you still be in Egypt?
Yep, sure will.
What do you think could happen on that day?
Well, I don't think it's going to be like an overnight event, if you will, but I do think that the old cycle, the old 26,000-year cycle will be over, and that we're heading into a new cycle. And so the celebration is really after sunset on the 21st of December, moving into you know, the following day and the following spring equinox, and we're moving into a completely new cycle. So I think that we'll be shedding the old ways, the patriarchal ways of being and thinking, power over rather than empowerment. And we're going to, what we need is a model for a new, an empowered humanity, and we need to be rebuilding from this bloodbath that we've been in. But I think there's lots of reason to be optimistic, no matter what they try to tell you.
I think so too. The significance of this moment, these dates, are going to carry into 2013, do you think?
Well, yes, because if in fact it's the precession of the equinoxes, the spring equinox is the, really going to be bringing the new energy. So I think the significance of the ending at solstice is it's the exact galactic alignment, but it's also heralding the end of the cycle, which is different than the beginning of the new one. I mean, I know that they're coordinated, but I think the energy will just continue to build.
Carmen, there are pyramids all over the planet. Are they interconnected?
I think so. And I think that the grids have been broken. And like I said, some pyramids are alive and some pyramids are dead. But yeah, they're like the acupuncture points on the planet itself.
Were they strategically put where they are, or was that just random?
Oh, no. I think it's completely connected. And there is a zone in the midsection of the planet, if you look at the map. And that's where most of the pyramids are placed. And they're sacred sites on the longitudinal lines. And they may not match up with the latitudes, but they're evenly dispersed around the planet, and I think that's highly significant.
How do you think the architect or the architects put this together?
Well, it's amazing. I think that Atlantis actually was a worldwide culture, and I think they understood some of this, and even when they knew that Atlantis was going to go down from overcharging the crystals, I think they sent out expeditions to various places on the planet and built pyramids.
Well, that's possible.
It's a theory. I mean, again, you know, we have to work with what we can, and we have to try to demonstrate some of these things, and I think we're approaching that.
In Egypt, did you also go to the Sphinx? I'm curious.
Absolutely. Last time we were there, we actually had permits that allowed my group to go into the chambers, the inner chamber, the heart of the Sphinx. There's another big chamber at the back left rump. We were able to go into all of them. There's another 14-foot chamber that's actually got the only exposed part of the Sphinx where the restoration didn't cover it, so it's the original part of it. And we were able to go between the paws, watch the sound and light show from there, and be inside those chambers. It was quite incredible.
What do you think of Edgar Cayce talking about the Hall of Records there at the foot of the Sphinx?
Well, I think of it as beneath and in front of, and I think that there, you know, there definitely was a temple there that's been covered up with asphalt and cement. There's a temple of Isis down there, and I think that there are chambers, numerous chambers underneath the Giza Plateau, and I do think that the secrets are contained within. It may not be a book, an English book or mm-hmm. a spaceship or anything, but I do think that there are codes, and they have to do with the location. And there's something about being underground that connects to different energies. It's very important.
Do you think Zahi Hawass knows what's there, maybe already dug it up?
Yes. Actually, I do. And there's been corroboration about that as well. They're deadly afraid that people are going to make the connections, and they try to keep people out of there. But I think that those passageways have been blocked, but they have been found.
Do you think they took those mysteries out?
Well, I don't know if it's actually a physical object or if it's more something on the etheric plane that has to be reached and understood through consciousness. So if that's the case, then you can't really take it apart. You have to achieve the consciousness to be able to understand it and decipher it, which is how all of this fits together in my mind.
Well, I think the Sphinx, I think it's older than the pyramids. And if it is, then it probably doesn't have anything to do with that in terms of the Hall of Records. I think it has to do with mankind, you know, our creation, something like that.
Well, it's definitely one of the best mysteries we have.
Yeah, well, it really is. Well, now, when you go to Egypt, do you feel safe there these days?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been there twice since the revolution, and it's just fine. There's a lot of propaganda that tries to scare people, and I think it's part of, you know, financially crushing the Egyptians, but I think it's perfectly safe, really.
And how do they treat Americans? Okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've never, in all the years I've been going there since 77, I've never heard anybody criticize an American or say a negative word about them, ever.
When you look at the pyramids, is it something that you look at in awe, even though you've been there 27 times? I would guess you can't get enough of it.
Nope. And when I'm in Luxor on the Nile cruise, all I want to do is go back and see the pyramids. And I do travel around Egypt, and my eyes need to touch those pyramids.
Looking up the pyramids, how tall, how huge does it look?
Well, it's like a 48-story building.
Okay.
They're really high, and I've climbed it.
That is a long climb.
Oh, it really is.
Somebody sent me an email earlier that said, you know, George, there were giants on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
What if the giants built the pyramids?
Well, that would make it a lot easier. And
it sure would.
There's a lot of evidence of giants in Egypt. There are giant sarcophagi lined up with the baby ones and the medium ones right in the National Museum. And there are stone sarcophagi at Saqqara that I've seen for 22-foot beings. And why would they have those if they didn't have tall beings? And why are the temples so tall? I really think that there's something to that.
Back to your chakra system theory in that study. How many points do we have on the body? And how did we find them in the first place?
Okay, well, there's different ways of looking at that. But if you listen to Hakim, they're connected to the glandular system in the body. So the thymus and the pituitary gland,
sure,
and all of that. And so the glands are actually controlling a lot. And they connect to the virtual chakras that are the energetic spiritual body as well as the physical. Now, we can say that there's codons on the front and back of the body. I've been working with the idea that there's 11 on the front and 11 on the back. There are people who say that there's extra chakras above the crown. But typically, through yoga studies, we say there's 7.
The chakra system points, are they like acupuncture points?
Well, I think they're more like energetic wheels. The acupuncture points are more like the meridians that travel through the whole body and connect to various organs. They're described in the ancient yoga practices as wheels of energy.
If you get sick, can you fix yourself through these points?
Well, the alignment seems to be really important. And with this machine that's called the gaseous discharge visualization invented by Dr. Konstantin Korkov, there's actually a measure of the alignment of the chakras that's calculated through a logarithm from the photonic emissions coming off the fingertips. And it is so sensitive that you can see how your chakras go in and out depending on what you're thinking and the conditions in a room. And so I've measured several people in several different conditions at sacred sites, stationary in a home, and you can see how the chakras will adjust depending on what the person is experiencing. It's like the psychological profile of the person is indicated through the chakras. It's fascinating.
Were you surprised at all in your study with anything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was really, really surprised at how long it took people to recover from being in the sarcophagus. And it's true, when you get out, you're kind of wiggly and it's hard to stand up even because there's so much energy going.
You're zoned out, aren't you?
Yeah. And so everyone doesn't respond the same way, and I think I was, you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt that they would understand this kind of energy more, and I think it's largely misunderstood, and we don't have the vocabulary for it, but it certainly gave me a lot of respect for, you know, what it puts people through and how they have to integrate, synthesize. And so when I say I'm convinced that it's made me more psychic over the years, it's not like it happens instantly at all. It can take as much as 3 months to integrate the energy of it.
Whoever these people were, how do you think they got this knowledge?
Oh, it's a very good question as well. You know, if you listen to somebody like Laird Scranton, who studied the Dogon mysteries, they talk about the ancestral teachers.
That's right.
Everybody's talking about the ancestral teachers, and you can see them on the ceiling of the Temple of Dendera. There's also a photo gallery on my website of that. And so it seems to me that some of these high-level beings incarnated, and some of them were in another realm and they had access to them, but they practiced this, they talked about this. The connection to the other side was very important to them. And so, and I think many people are learning to commune with their guides, to talk to their angels, that sort of thing. And so I think it's real, but it was kind of outlawed out of our vocabulary. We weren't supposed to be thinking about these things. And so I think we're a little bit crippled when it comes to talking about it. But I think that the wise ancestral teachers were very real to the ancient Egyptians.
Was it because of your past lives you were drawn to Egypt?
Absolutely. I started wanting to go there when I was 11.
And at that point, you didn't know about the past lives.
Oh, yeah. I started having past life memories when I was 6 years old, and they were specifically about Egypt.
Wow.
But I didn't understand that as a little girl. But I kept on picking up little, you know, every bit of paper and books I could find. And when I saw the first time I saw a picture of the Sphinx, I instantly was asking, how close can you get to it? And I was driven to go, making 25 cents an hour at the time. Tickets were like $1,100. And I gathered the money and went. I went when I was 22. It didn't happen instantly, but I was determined to find out why I was having these visions. And I could see the headdresses and the jewelry and feel. And then I knew I shouldn't tell anybody as well, which was equally interesting.
What did your parents think about all this?
Well, they told me my guides told me, don't tell your parents. And I thought, well, that's probably a really good idea. But I was, you know, excited about, you know, I was asking, where's Egypt? And my mother said, look at the Atlas. And I was calling the airlines when I was 11 years old to find out how much tickets were. And so, you know, kind of roll their eyes and shrug their shoulders and, you know, think whatever. But that didn't stop me.
All right, let's do a quick review, Carmen. What do you think the pyramids are for?
I think they are ascension devices, and I think they connect us to the cosmic energies.
Those cosmic energies available to anybody?
Yes, but it takes a certain amount of training to contain them, and it takes a certain amount of discipline. I think we have to learn to contain the energies, and they can easily, you know, bounce right off and not connect. So just the way you can be completely unconscious or you can be conscious, you have to take yourself to this learning.
And by tapping into these energies, what does that accomplish for us?
Consciousness. In the end of the pyramid code, I said, how would this world change if consciousness was the highest value? Right? Because we don't have that. Money is the highest value. You know,
sadly.
All of that, sadly. And so consciousness is the key.
DVD, The Pyramid Code, of course, that's available where?
Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, directly from Culture, and before long, it'll be streaming on my website.
Super. Did you enjoy doing that?
Oh, yes. And it certainly motivated me to make another series.
Now, we're going to talk about angels when we come back, Carmen. How did you get involved in that? Was it also because of these past lives?
Yes. Angels and Archetypes is a book with 22 goddesses and their higher selves are angels. I was working as a psychologist for several decades, and that this was a teaching of feminine consciousness. So the subtitle, An Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness. So it combines tarot, numerology, and astrology. And I'll explain more about that. But it's like a system for understanding ourselves.
All right. Well, stay with us. Carmen Bolter, our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. We've been talking about her work, The Pyramid Code, her thoughts on the pyramids. I've never been out there, but I bet it would be fascinating to go, no doubt. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about angels. And, of course, if you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. Just send your message. And also, don't forget, on Wednesday now, we're going to debut in one of the segments, someone sounding off, a Coast to Coast listener. Listen in more on Wednesday for that.